Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, this is the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and followers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lives online. Listen to your favorite spiritual and master teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. My name is Luciana Siglich. I'm the founder of Inner Healers, and I will be your host in this adventure. May you allow yourself to enjoy it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. Today we have this wonderful woman, Colleen Forrest. She's a reality guide and personal growth mentor. She was educated through a lifetime of studying and observing metaphysical life principles taught to her early in life and learning how to apply those principles to her own life in a positive way. She has been sharing her findings with others and watching their lives transform since the 70s. And has supported herself and her family through a private practice, which she founded in 1985. She came up through the ranks of experimental learning rather than the more traditional academic route. She started out in the mental health field in the early 70s, hired and trained by a HMO in social work and mental health. She has been in the field of personal growth ever since, moving to the addictions field in the early 80s, where she was one of the pioneers of codependency and family of origin work in Chattanooga, Tennessee. She's a perpetual student of life and consciousness. She has devoted her career to studying the masters of various parent disciplines, family dynamics, Jungian principles, dreams, shadow work, psychodrama, energy, as well as the law of manifestation, body-oriented practices such as yoga, physical unwinding, and qigong are just some of the approaches Lynn applies in her work with others. She is the founder of the Real Life Center, which she holds in Chattanooga, and she also works in Forest Heaven, a location for her gathering in Mount Eagle Mountain in Tennessee. Help me welcome Lynn. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Luciana. Thank you for having me here today.
Hey, thanks for being with us today. Many of us have been following your work for a couple of years now here in Peru. Even I work with some of your principles in my own private practice, so we're very grateful, first of all, for all the work that you've been doing for all of us, actually, since you started, and also for being with us today. For all our listeners, we've already done some shows on victim consciousness before, and this is a very special show because we will talk about how to stay out of this triangle. For those who are listening to us for the first time, Lynn describes this victim triangle as a state of, or actually victimhood, as a state of consciousness that occurs when we fail to take complete responsibility for our responses to life and results in stressful negative emotions. She says that it's a state that we often associate with manifestations of the ego, such as self-obsession, inferiority, lack of joy, guilt, frustration, and so on. She says that the ego assumes many different roles when we think, talk, and or act as victims. She believes that every dysfunctional interaction in relationship with other self takes place on the victim triangle. The victim triangle was actually uncovered by Dr. Stephen Cartman, right, Aline?
That's right. Dr. Stephen Cartman, who is a psychiatrist, was very much a part of the modality called transactional analysis back in the 70s, which is when I encountered his triangle, which he called the drama triangle, which I have. He's a diagram. He's an interactional diagram developer. And I'm the one who took his diagram, or one of the ones, and began to experiment with it on the ground. And so that was in the 70s. Since then, I've worked with that model. It has become my understanding of what victim consciousness is. The three positions on the victim triangle, the persecutor, rescuer, and victim, are the three states of consciousness that we move into when we are in victim consciousness. Victim consciousness is any time that we look out at the world and say that what we see out there and the way people are being and doing is what is causing my unhappiness. We blame the world. That's the primary characteristic of life on the victim triangle, is blame. We either blame ourselves, others, or the world for our own state of unhappiness, and that's victim. And we do that in one of those three roles. So the three roles on the victim triangle are not only roles we play in victim consciousness, they are defense strategies. Each one of those roles represent a defense strategy that we take on in victim consciousness. The victim is a defense strategy of collapse. So we go deeper into the victim, which means we go into a state of helplessness, of impotence, of being at the mercy of, and we actually collapse with the, and it's a defense strategy because we believe that if we are little and helpless, somebody will come along and save us, will help us, rescue us, and that's the defense strategy of the victim. And then this defense strategy of the persecutor bully is the idea that because we feel at the mercy of, we feel powerless, the best strategy then is to overpower others, is to be bigger and badder than they are, is to attack. And so we take care of ourselves by defend ourselves by offending, by striking out, by attacking, and that's the defense strategy of the persecutor. And then the rescuer also has a defense strategy, and it is a defense strategy that says, since I'm at the mercy of this, I can change, if I change it, if I control it, if I fix it, take charge of it, make you dependent on me, become indispensable to you by being the one who fixes you, then that will be how I take care of that feeling of impotency, of feeling at the mercy of. So each one of the roles are defense strategies. And they create, and in those defense strategies, we create a story about who we are and who the world is, what we can expect from it, which we spend our lives playing out and reenacting over and over and over. It's what I call our core belief cycle. The core belief cycle, which comes from, again, our own story about who we are, our own unhappy story about who we are, it gets played out through those three roles on the victim triangle. And those two elements, our story about ourselves, our core belief cycle, which is our core belief cycle, and how we play it out on that triangle, make up the components of victim consciousness. So the masters who move, come into self-mastery then is about beginning to move off of that triangle, and we do that and by recognizing, number one, what our beliefs are, by beginning to make them conscious, by paying attention to what it is that we are believing, and then questioning those beliefs and beginning to step out of those roles into happier alternatives through what I call the guiding principles of reality, which I've been doing a lot of work on recently. And actually, we're taking this work to kids, which has been great because it's helped me simplify the model so that it works better for adults, too. The adults are actually, my adult clients and students are actually saying, wow, this kids model is helping me understand better. So It's very simple, not necessarily easy, but a very simple step-by-step process of beginning to move off of the victim triangle.
So in your, what is it that makes us believe these unhappy thoughts or stories? How come that we get to believe them? When does this start? How do you, in your experience, how do you think this happens?
Well, I think there's a twofold explanation. There is the real reason, and then there's the ostensible or sort of obvious kind of reason or explanation would be a better word rather than reason. Explanation for how it is we come to take on this unhappy story. One, we come into a family which already has in place an unhappy story based on what I call lineage beliefs. These are beliefs that have been passed on from generation to generation that we, when we come into that family, sort of inherit. And that is, it might be a story of deprivation, abandonment, betrayal. It might be a story that says of worthlessness, of a cultural worthlessness, or worthlessness based on our gender, male or female, or a worthlessness that comes from our racial or cultural identification that we grow up believing makes us less than others. So these, but we come into a family that already has in place an unhappy story, and we take it on. We never question it. We just believe automatically that it must be true. After all, it's what they believe. So we take it on, and it becomes the lens through which we see the world. It becomes, remember, the reality formula is this. When I believe these stories that are handed down to me or that I make up in my own mind as a child based on my interaction with those around me who are stuck in their unhappy story, when I take that on and personalize it, then I begin to believe it, and two things automatically happen. The reality formula says that when I believe what I think, I will automatically begin to feel and act as if that's true. And when I feel and act as if what I believe is true, I will act in ways that invite others to respond to me in a way that will prove me right. So I prove what I believe by feeling and acting the part. So that's how it is we prove it. So we come to that we come to these beliefs by inheriting them. That's one way. And the other way, the deeper reason or deeper explanation of how it is we come to take on these stories is because that's what we're designed to do. We come to this planet to take on a story and then play it out so that we can see what it is we're believing that's separating us from source, from our connection with that which truly sources us. And I think it's a natural happening just by virtue of taking on the very first core belief, which is that we are separate from source. And as soon as we believe that, we feel isolated, disconnected, and alone. We feel fear. And from there, the other unhappy stories launch, and we are off and running. But I believe that that's what we come here to do. We come here to actually go through a period of forgetting who it is we are really and identifying with this less than unhappy story so that we can play it out in the concrete, in physical reality, and experiment and experience the repercussions of that. And change our mind if we want to, move to a higher frequency if we choose, move to it, which means moving to a happier story about who we are.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, what role does feeling fear of abandonment play in all of this?
So the fear of abandonment is a story that says there is no one here for me. And if I come into a family or born into a position in a family, first born, second born, third born. It can just be with the order, birth order I'm born in can sort of set me up for a belief system. But abandonment, remember, feelings come from what we believe. So the feeling of abandonment, which then becomes a theme, is based on a belief that says there is no help, there is nobody here for me, that others don't see me through, that I'm not lovable, that I can't expect someone to really be there for me. When I believe that, I will feel and act the thought. I will that thought out. I will feel and act as if it's true that I'm disconnected, that nobody loves me, that I'm not there. And when I do that, I will treat you in ways, I will actually act in ways towards you, towards those in my life, that serve to push them away. And then when they go away, I will accuse them of abandoning me. I will feel abandoned. And that's me playing out my abandonment story.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. So you say that then we kind of pick up all this information when we start our journey here on Earth from our families, from other parental figures or adults that might be around with us. And you say that there's a way to actually live our lives outside this triangle, right?
Yes, we can move. And I, frankly, Luciana, I believe that what we are actually moving to a place in evolution, in our evolution. Because like I said, those three roles are not only roles on the triangle, the persecutor, rescuer, victim, but they're not only defense strategies, which means they are ways that we defend and protect ourselves when we see ourselves as victims. That's what we're doing. The victim triangle is all about trying to protect ourselves from our belief that says we're at the mercy of a dangerous, scary world. Because we feel separated, because we believe the first, like I said, lie, which is that we're separate. Well, how can we be? Try to separate yourself from source. Stop breathing. Just stop breathing. That's what connects you. Can you do that and say, no, breath is source energy coming in and through us. And so we cannot be separate from that, but we have a story that we're separate. We have a story that we are disconnected, that we can have a life separate from that which sources us. It's impossible, but we believe it nonetheless. And when we believe it, we feel and act it out. And so we act in ways that push people away, that will actually bring us the evidence that proves that we are separate. We will find evidence everywhere we look to prove us right. So I think you asked a question. I didn't answer it. What was the question? Did I miss a question there? Did I answer your question or did I?
You are always answering all my questions and more. That's one of the reasons I love to talk to you through here. So you were saying this triangle actually identifies three defense strategies, which are the victim, the prosecutor, and the rescuer. And you were also saying that there is a way, or there are ways, that we can actually change the belief system that kind of unites our response, our defense response, right? So that means that we can actually change the belief system in a way that we can live our lives without thinking or feeling that we need to defend ourselves from that which is outside ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, what I was getting ready to say was that not only are the three roles, both the defense strategy and roles we play, but they are also levels of or stages of maturity. And so, in other words, as a human race, we move through each of those roles, each of those stages. We come into life as helpless babies. We come in believing that we're at the mercy of. And we literally are. We can't feed ourselves. We can't walk. We are helpless babies. But when we still think we're helpless babies, when we're still believing that, or victims, by the time we're 30, And we're stuck in victim because we're still feeling at the mercy of, we're still feeling powerless. The second stage of maturity then for humanity is to move from that sense of powerlessness to wanting to feel powerful. And the way we do that is by striking out. That's a stage of maturity. Every two-year-old, you'll see it. You know, that's not yours, it's mine. And they jerk the toy away, and they push, and they hit, and they strike out as a way of establishing dominance. That is a stage of maturity. We as humanity go through that. We go through it individually. We also go through it culturally and as a race, as the human race. And so the second stage of maturity then is the bully, is the persecutor. And then the third stage, which is a higher stage, we're moving through levels of maturity. Now we move to a third stage of maturity, which is that of we want to fix it. We want to make it better. But we still have a little bit of bully in there. We still have a little bit of persecutor because we look at and we see problems and we think that the world needs to be controlled, manipulated, changed, made different. And these are all stages of maturity. And frankly, the rescuer mentality is about as far as humanity or has reached. We as a human people have there's not many of us who have developed past the rescuer stage, and so we're sort of stuck in those three lower options, those three levels of maturity. But there is a fourth level of maturity that is now becoming available to us as humans. This is how it seems to me. And the fourth stage of maturity happens only and can only happen when we give up blame. Blame, and so... Blame is what keeps us in the three lower levels of maturity. We either blame ourselves because we're not strong enough and we need somebody else to do it, or we blame the world for doing it to us, and we blame others and feel like we need to defend ourselves against them, or we blame others for doing it to less. And then so we then move into the rescuer. It's all about blame, those three roles. And so to move into the fourth level of maturity, which I think is now coming available, is to give up blame. And what does that mean? That means that we line up with what I call the guiding principles of reality. The very first guiding principle says there's only one reality, and that what we do rather than blame, rather than see a problem everywhere we look, we begin to make peace with the way things are right now. That's to line up with. We befriend reality the way things are. Rather than resist, push against it, blame others, we begin to look for what it can offer us. Why is reality the way it is? How can it serve me rather than, you know, picketing, resisting reality? It's as if we're picketing it, you know, walking back and forth with a sign that says, you know, I protest reality, I'm against it, I don't like it, and we get lots of people to sign on, and we all agree it shouldn't be the way it is, but reality is, it is the way it is. Doesn't mean we have to like it, doesn't mean that we have to agree with it, it just means that we come to make peace with it, we befriend it. And that is the fourth level. We begin, and we do that by stepping back, we become observers of reality rather than reactors to it. And that's the way out.
Mm-hmm. So, it makes definitely sense, Blaine. So, what role do you think individual emotional maturity play on the blaming learned response?
What role do say that? I didn't hear your whole question. I'm sorry. Yeah. I missed the last part.
No, it's okay. So what, in your experience, what role does individual emotional maturity play on our blaming learned response?
What role does emotional maturity or emotional immaturity play? I didn't catch whether it was immaturity or maturity you're asking for. Maturity? What role
yeah,
does emotional maturity play?
Yeah, you know.
Well,
yeah,
when we
know,
come into emotion. Go ahead.
Go on. Okay, so I was wondering because you know, if you compare people, you know, adults at the same age, not all of them have the same emotional
level of maturity.
Right, and also if you compare men and women at the same age, they don't have the same maturity level either. So I was wondering, what role does this play in our beliefs of blame?
Well, developmentally, of course, we're taking this model to children. And what we find is that children get it really fast. And not only do they get it fast, they act on it right away. They get they haven't had the time and reinforcement of an unhappy story, so they're not as stuck and as addicted to. I like to say this is the real addiction, in my opinion, and that is we are addicted to our unhappy story, and we. The other, quote, addictions that we call addictions, what they are the way we deal with our unhappy story. But anyway, so you can actually encounter a child who gets this, who is able to respond with it, but they still developmentally have to go through a physical maturation. They have to go through a sort of physical and mental, but even still, there's a maturity about them that advances them beyond their the levels of development physically and mentally. So, in other words, they're still growing, they're still expanding. But what happens is they're starting from a foundation. What this does is it puts a peaceful foundation in place, which facilitates maturation. So that they began to learn how or get on board with, or it's more of that. It wins their cooperation so that they begin to cooperate with the process of evolving, of maturing. So what you have are kids who are going to mature much faster, and grown-ups too. Once we align with the truth, maturation is advanced. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. So what is the relation between blame and guilt?
What is the relation to what?
What is the relation between blame and guilt?
I still didn't hear that last word. Between being what?
Between blame.
Oh, between blame and guilt?
Yep. Yes, and guilt.
Okay, between blame and guilt. Yeah, there's an echo, a little bit of an echo, and it's messing with the words, so I apologize for not being able to understand clearly. So what is the difference between blame and guilt? So blame, well, actually guilt can be a repercussion of blame. I think that there is a place for remorse, for guilt in terms of remorse, but there is also a sort of shaming, a guilt that really is shame that comes from punishing. It's sort of a punishment for what happens with this work is that we lose that. We no longer feel like we shouldn't have, or we blew it, or we failed. It's what happens because we begin to understand that there are no accidents, there are no coincidences. What happens in our life can serve us. It's not what happens that determines who we are or what we are or what we should or shouldn't have, but it is how we think about it. It's how we deal with it that determines whether or not we feel guilty and ashamed, or whether we then take it and go, wow, that didn't work so well, and I don't really want to go through that, the consequences of that again. There are natural consequences that come from making the choices to believe what we believe. So we begin to see that. We stop blaming others for it. There's no need to feel guilty about it because we understand it's a learning experience. So what happens is there's less and less guilt as we give up blame. And it becomes more and more of a process that we see ourselves in that is a natural process. It's a natural process of growing, of learning, of experimenting with the principles of life and learning how to collaborate with them, to come into a relationship with Source so that we can actually use the principles to manifest the life we desire.
Mm-hmm. So in the article that you sent for our Inner Healers blog, there's a fragment of it that says that we are in this journey for a greater consciousness. And we are usually led around by our cravings, our carnal desires, with no thought of the cost to us. We simply react to life with no real thought about what we are believing or why we do or what we do. We live in this state of immaturity for a long time, and some do it for life. And it is okay if some choose to live this way for life.
That's right.
Because it is
that's
a main stage of the story,
that's
also of the journey. But what if somebody wants to leave this triangle, wants to actually transcend this immaturity way of living? You were saying at the beginning of the show that there is a three-step process that we can go through, which starts with observing what our beliefs are. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah. So the process of moving out of victim consciousness, first of all, becomes exactly what we're doing right now, which is beginning to understand what it's all about and beginning to remove blame from it. So that instead of there's a problem with this, there's a problem with where I am, there's a problem with where the world is, there's a problem with where you are, and then so I need to either resist, I need to resist it in some way. Resistance is what holds us in victim consciousness and is what separates us from remembering who we really are. So really this process of mastery, self-mastery, as you call it, is really an awakening process. It's about waking up to the reality and what reality, capital R, reality is in fact. And what reality, and there are certain guiding principles that we replace our victim consciousness with. We replace our victim mentality with certain guiding principles, like the one I mentioned, that there's only one reality and that we can befriend it, that that's possible. We don't have to resist it. When we stop resisting it, we begin to understand that our thoughts cause our feelings, that it's not what happens outside of us that causes our feelings. This is a guiding principle. We begin to understand that anytime we separate ourselves from others by judging them, we turn them into enemies that we then resist, and that resisting reality creates misery. We begin to understand these are some of the guiding principles. We understand that the world is that how we feel about and treat ourselves is how others learn to treat us. We teach people how to treat us because the world mirrors to us. They will mirror to us our own unhappy story about ourselves and the world around us, that the world is a mirror, that it's always reflecting to us what it is we believe, and that works for us. That's not a problem. It's not something we need to get over. It is the design of things, because we are here in this physical reality to play out what our belief system is so that we can make it conscious, so that we can see it in action, so that we can interact with our belief system in the flesh and see how well it works for us. It's all a process of growing and evolving. I think that Earth is a nursery school for spiritual beings. I think we come here as little babes we come here to grow up and become fully developed spiritual beings. And we go through these stages, the helpless baby stage, what I call the victim is the helpless baby, then we move into the persecutor bully stage. We move through these stages, the rescuer, and then finally we begin to become observers. And the observer is someone who participates consciously in the design of things, who understands that we're here to play out our unhappy story so that we can see it, not judge it, not beat ourselves up about it, not need to project it onto someone else and then blame them for it, but to really see, well, what is this showing me about what I believe? And is it true? What would be different if I didn't believe that thought? How would I act differently? How would I feel differently if I didn't believe that I was worthless? How would I feel or act differently if I didn't believe the world was dangerous? What would be different if? And so we begin to, that's the process. We begin to line up with the reality constructs instead of the victim consciousness constructs.
Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, how can they recognize when they are standing in a point of resistance? How can help understand when are they standing in a point of resistance?
Anytime we are feeling negative, what we call unhappy feelings, we are in resistance, because that's what unhappiness is. Unhappiness is the emotional body signaling us, whether it's fear or anger, resentment, whether it's guilt or doubt or whatever the unhappy feeling is, that is the emotional body's way of signaling us that we are out of alignment, out of harmony with reality. Because reality, when we're in alignment with reality, what we see when we look out at the world is a world of peace. Now, here's what I mean by that. This weekend I had a workshop up on the mountain, where I live, and we do our workshops largely outside on a big stage on the water. And so we have nature all around us. And so we had been doing a core belief cycle with someone, helping them get in touch with their victim story. And they were talking about the chaos in their lives and how unhappy when they, I said, all right, everyone, just stop for a moment and listen. And everyone paused, and you could hear the quietness of nature. You could feel the peace, the pervasive feeling of peace all around us. And I said, this, what you're feeling right now, what you're hearing right now in the environment around you, that is reality. And it is always available for us. And when we line up with that, regardless of what else is going on, regardless of the chaos or the dysfunction or people doing or saying, we can choose at any moment whether we're going to line up with the peace that is always present in this moment, or we're going to jump on the unhappy story and take that ride. That's our choice, moment to moment. And we make that choice in our mind. And we either believe the unhappy story and go off on that, you know, then it becomes, you know, so it's like being in my garden and walking around, even though I'm there physically, but in my mind I'm going, oh, well, she said blah, 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 and they shouldn't be, and what's wrong with me, and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm not even able to see the flowers. I'm not able to even be there because where am I? I'm lost in some non-existent place in my mind about how things shouldn't be the way they are, and how he said that and she did this, and how I can't have because they won't let me, and I can't even be here in this moment where peace abides only always because I'm lost my unhappy story. And that's what the guiding principles do. They help us align again with the peace of reality, the peace that's available for us, even in this, no matter where we are in this moment.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, we have to observe what our beliefs are. Then we have to question those beliefs, and then we need to step from those beliefs. What role do you think meditation can play in achieving this?
Well, what happens is, what role does a person play in achieving this? Is the first,
does
the first step is...
Does meditation play in achieving
this? Oh, does meditation play in achieving this? Meditation is just a vehicle for quietening the rah-rah in our heads. It quietens down. Meditation is whatever we do in the attempt to quieten the unhappy story that otherwise runs rampant continuously in the mind. And there are many, many forms of meditation, and we actually, I believe, the work of observer. When we are an observer, we are in a meditative state. What does that mean? It means that rather than reacting to life, I'm studying it meditatively. I'm reflecting on it. I'm looking at what it's teaching me. I'm seeing it as a lesson from my creator source. And so I'm in a meditative state, even as I observe the principles in the situation. I ask myself the questions, and all the guiding principles prompt particular questions, like questions like, what am I believing right now? Is it a happy thought or an unhappy thought? When I think an unhappy thought, how do I feel? And how do I act? This is me meditatively reflecting on what's going on. So in this way, I can actually carry meditation into my day-to-day, that this is a form of meditation. It's also meditative to sit and what we think of in Zazen and where we're sitting in like a Buddhist-style meditation, that's okay too. That what we're doing, again, is silencing the mind. We want to quieten the thoughts. That's a good practice, but it's also hard for the human mind because the human mind runs a story constantly. Then we turn that into a story, and, oh, I just can't do it right, and I just can't get in my mind to be quiet, and this doesn't work for me. And we're off on another unhappy pair. Well, that's not meditative. So, again, meditative is anything we do that quietens the story. And whatever that is a meditation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lynn, thank you very much. I want to invite, actually, both of us want to invite all our listeners to awaken the victim consciousness. And to allow yourself to blend with reality, to breathe in whatever the present, the exact right here, right now moment is holding for you, so that you can experience this thriving experience, this wonderful experience that means being alive. Thank you very much, Lynn, for being with us today. I was wondering if there's any other thing that you would like to tell our listeners before we end the show.
You know, thank you for inviting me, and I would like to share with the audience that we are developing a model for kids, we have, like I said, a workshop this weekend with families. It's so inspiring to watch children get this method and this message, and they are our future. So I encourage you to go to www.realityformula.com. That's our website for kids, and also that's realityformula.com. realityformula.com. For those who are parents or teachers or anything like that, I would recommend it and highly recommend this as a model for working with kids. Also, my website, too, is lynnforce.com. And thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks to you, Lynn, and we hope to have you back again soon. Big hug your way. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Luciana.
Bye.